What a great morning, super morning, all sorts of color and kids and energy and brightness and joy, and it's nostalgic for some of us. I think He Lives, that song, I think it's the first Easter song I remember hearing in the 70s during the cantata that my Methodist church did, and it's still alive, just like He is. That song just keeps on going. Great morning, super great morning. Almost 3 billion people around the world are celebrating this moment, this historic occasion. It's a huge celebration. But we will have missed the core part of Easter if nothing within us rises. If nothing within you is regenerated, arguably, the primary reason that the celebration and the rising of Jesus does exist is so it would happen with you. So let's make sure that all the beautiful parts and all the pieces do their job and draw us into deeper and critical realities. And I'm thrilled with the presentation this morning. I feel like it did that. All the words, the songs, the sincerity, kids reading. I don't mean to make light of it. It is a beautiful expression of our faith, and let's let it do its work and draw us in, because here's the big deal. Easter isn't just about the power of God to raise Jesus from the grave. It's about the same power in you. That's a big statement to make, but listen, this is Paul in the middle of his beautiful thesis in the middle, Romans 8. The Spirit of God, catch this, the Spirit of God who raised Jesus from the dead lives in you. And he's referring to those that have decided to follow Jesus. They've taken a step of faith and they've received the grace and the mercy of God, and they are now affirmed and eternally secure. And he says, the same Spirit that raised him from the dead lives in you. Just as God raised Christ from the dead, he will give life to your bodies by this same Spirit living with you. It's a big statement. But I know, if we're honest, even during some of those songs and some of those pictures and some of those words, we look at that, we hear that, and it seems more like a distant reality than a personal reality. Right? You can feel the depth or the shallowness of your own faith. I'm not singling you out. That is an experience that I have, or anybody has. When you sing of these glorious truths, there's something within us that says, do I believe all that? Am I hanging my hat on an actual firm hook here? Or is this more of a myth that I'm believing in that I think has some purpose in my life? Is it real? Jesus' power can be disappointingly absent. The wilderness that you're in, the mountain that you didn't choose to climb, that you have to climb, the storm that wrecked your boat, that you're trying to put behind you, when it comes to Jesus, we understand, we've thought about, we've heard about this power to rescue, yet often I'm not feeling rescued. I'm not feeling that power, if we're honest, right? When it comes to experiencing what we expect in the spaces of chronic or terminal health diagnosis, irreparably damaged relationships, financial doom, where's the power? Why am I not being rescued? But we keep reading these words, this one even more to the point. Listen to Paul speaking to this very young, one of the very first churches. I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people, and his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead. There is a promise, there is a picture, there is a massive suggestion here that our lives should experience the dead raising power of Jesus. Yet we would rarely describe that. Sometimes, maybe, here and there. How do we apprehend that power? How do we understand? Well, first thing we need to do is always remember to immerse yourself in the data and the facts of history that have yet to be disproved because they're true. To put yourself, to live into that story. That's been the historic truth of the people of God forever and ever. They don't tell stories like they happened to somebody else. They tell stories like it happened to us. We can move it into a less abstract space just by revisiting the documented facts of these historic times. Because Jesus was born in phenomenal, miraculous fashion. He was a baby. He was a boy. He scraped his knees. He got in trouble. He had to go to his room. He turned into a man, a real man, and he lived. He breathed. He loved. He cried. He laughed. He went to church. He influenced people. He celebrated. He was disappointed. He was emotional. He walked. He ran. He bled. He sneezed. He got sand in his eyes. He got dirt under his nails. He smelled good and smelled bad. He danced. He prayed. He anguished. He slept. He ate. He preached. And he exhibited some very unexplainable power. He was real. And he had real power. Chemistry followed his commands when he turned water into wine. Atmospheric conditions obeyed his voice when he whispered for the storms to stop. He made blind people see. He made deaf people hear. He made lame people walk. His influence frightened every power structure, political, religious, economic. He had real power, serious power, a real man with real power, undeniable influence. Crowds were growing. Hope was rising. People were excited, desperate for change. They were exhausted by the weight of injustice and oppression. And here was someone flipping the script, offering dignity and healing and hope. He was a real man doing real stuff, caring for real people, threatening real oppressive power structures. And then he ruined everything. He really did. He refused to wield that power in the way people wanted him to do it. Yeah, they felt the same way you and I do. We can see what you do. We hear what you do. Why aren't you flipping this thing over? Why aren't you crushing those political oppressives? Why aren't you overtaking these military threats that surround us? Why won't you exhibit your power in the way we know that you can, in the way that we need? He wouldn't organize a rebellion. He wouldn't even defend himself. Instead, he says, I'm going to lay down my life. I'm going to set aside my power. And at age 33, you think about that? 33. He was just hitting its stride. And then he was dead, killed, unjustly, completely trumped up charges. But voluntarily. He could have stopped it easily, but he didn't. He went this way, did these things, bowed down to the Father's wishes for purposes beyond himself. Now, this is when you start to realize, wow, this guy is not simply human. He's also God. I don't know a single person. I don't know one single person that power doesn't corrupt them a little bit. At least a little bit.
He had all the power. All of it. Arguably could have set the world right. Instantly. And he laid it down. And they just couldn't grasp it. But his actions reverberate and have reverberated through history to this very moment and to you and to me. And everyone abandoned him. They couldn't grasp it. It seemed like, well, this was wrong. What we thought, they were disappointed. God didn't intervene. Jesus didn't stand up. It's tough. Everyone left, except for a few women. And I think I know why. I can explain that in just a minute. Mary of Magdalene, Mary, mother of James and Joseph, Salome, Joanna, other women, to be unnamed, were going to the tomb. He'd been dead, buried, sealed up, and they were taking spices and ornaments and hearts heavy with grief, and they were doing what they thought they could just go and care for the body. They hadn't even considered the logistical obstacle, the fact that this huge, heavy stone was in place, that they would not be able to move, which actually speaks to the grief that was going on in their heart, right? They couldn't come to grips with the fact that they weren't going to be able to touch their Savior. They were like, let's just go. They had no idea how they were going to get to the body, but they were going there because they needed to go there. The stone was already rolled away. He was already gone. They didn't understand why, and they started to scatter and tell other people, and John and James raced over there at a foot race and the whole nine yards, and they were still confused. And then after a whole bunch of craziness, Mary Magdalene ends up alone, weeping in the garden, in the graveyard, just wanting to be close to the one who loved her so well, whom she loved so much. You know that feeling where you want to be in that place, right? I was just talking to Terry Wynn the other day, a couple weeks ago, in Foyer, and I remember that he had traveled up to North Indiana, and I said, hey, how was your trip? And he said, it was great. We went to Notre Dame. We saw a hockey game. I visited my father, and I just kind of clumsily fell into that and said, oh, how old is your father? And he goes, oh, no, he's passed. I visited his grave. Yeah, that's what we do. Someone that we know, someone that we love, that loved us, we just want to be in their presence even though they're gone. This is Mary. She's weeping. She looks into the tomb again, and then there's these angels in there. And they say, why are you crying? And they say, you've taken my Lord away. I don't know where they put him. Somebody took him. And then Jesus shows up. Can you imagine? He looked like the gardener. She didn't recognize him right away, which makes sense. They were in a garden. The most likely person to be there would be a gardener. And this is just my own opinion. I don't know where Jesus was for the last 2 days, but I assume he was in some place like the Garden of Eden. So maybe he still had his sun hat on and his overalls and his little heavenly trowel. I don't know. But he was probably gardening. She doesn't recognize him. She says, if you've carried away my Lord, tell me where you put him, and I'll go get him. And he said one word to her, her name. And he said it in a way that moved her. It probably was recognizable, the dialect, the tone, the intimacy of it, the memory of hearing that name before. And she grabbed him. And Jesus says something like this to her. This is one of my favorite lines of Jesus. He goes, Mary, you're holding on too tight. After that, he just kept showing up in locked rooms, around tables, in front of hundreds of eyewitnesses to Jesus over a 40-day span after he was buried. Sometimes it helps with the abstractness of understanding Jesus to remember the facts of what happened. He ascended then bodily. There were eyewitnesses to the fact, and they gave their lives validating these truths. Nobody does that for a lie. So he lived, he died, he rose to new life, never died again, and hasn't died since. He's alive. He's alive. So we shout that Jesus is alive. But here's the thing. That's not his message. That's our exclamation. But the message of the dead 3 days guy in the grave, then not in the grave, and alive guy, his message is, you be alive. He didn't need to say, I'm alive. He was standing there. He was standing there. What he says is, now you live. The power that raised me is to live in you. That is the critical personal part of Easter we've got to deal with, or the whole thing is just a little weird. He laid down his life for this moment, right here, right now, that his spirit would rise in you. A dead man did what no man has ever done, shrugged off death, up and walked out of a grave, but then almost as astoundingly refused to leverage that power for himself, but instead for you and me. Instead of writing books, he looks into the shadows for the forgotten ones. He looks for the hurting ones, the ordinary ones. He stoops down and into the dirt. He comes off of the throne and whispers to the humble ones that he finds. And he says, I am so glad to meet you. Let's get you really living. I'm so glad to meet you. Can you let that sink in for a minute? Is it possible for you to set aside your own self-abasement, your own guilt, your own shame, your own desire to make yourself better before you meet Jesus? Can you just sit in this for a moment and say, understand that if Jesus were to walk up to you right now, he would be thrilled, thrilled with a tear in his eye, recognizing who you could and should be and saying, I want to live in you. I want to restore you. We shout, he's alive. He says, y'all too. Y'all too. This isn't just a sweet holiday. It's the most real thing that ever happened that we celebrate. And it's meant to make the most real thing out of you. So how do we come alive? Quickly. Yeah, I'm going to cover it quickly, and we should do it quickly. Like, how do we come alive quickly? The question becomes, how does your life actually change like that? Like dead guy back to life kind of change. Well, let me first start by telling you what doesn't do that. Hustle. Hustle doesn't do it. Therapy. It's good. Hustle's good. Therapy's good. Travel. Finding yourself. Going to church. The change you're aching won't come through those things. Reading the right books. Self-awareness is not salvation. Getting into shape. Better body. Good. Doesn't mean resurrected soul. Self-care. Helpful. Yes, healing, sometimes. Resurrection, no. Chasing a new identity, reinvention, also not resurrection. Finding your people, belonging is a very powerful thing, cannot give you life. In fact, if you're trying to get your life from other people, what you will do is suck the life out of them. That's what happens. Deconstructing your faith, tearing down own beliefs, has nothing to do with being reborn. It's not an intellectual change, not an emotional change, not a geographical change, not a church change, not a job change, not a gender change, not a political change. It's not more change in your power. You see where I'm coming from here? Those are not the changes that work. Resurrection power starts right here with a very simple, maybe not obvious, but simple, but sort of intuitive idea. Here it is. You ready? Here's how the beginnings of God's power in you starts to rise. Knowing him and being known by him. We dramatically underestimate the power of knowing and being known. If he's really alive, if he's present, real, near, then the invitation is clear. Get to know him and be known. Think about this. Like I said, it seems like, well, how's that going to work? But I don't know. But listen, when someone of Jesus' stature, right? Like, you meet just someone important. And what is the natural first step? If you're introduced to somebody that moves you or somebody that even like interests you, whatever. You want to get to know them. There's something that happens in the knowing and the being known of relationships. If Jesus is alive, then he is to be related with. I think this is why the women didn't abandon him. By and large, the men were with him on a mission. That's still the case. I have to remind myself and discipline myself all the time. Mike, it's more than mission. It's a person. Jesus is not just directing you where to go. He's calling you to be with him. And I think the women, more than the men, knew him, felt known by him, known in ways that they'd not been known before, and they remained connected no matter that the mission may seem to be lost. You see these clips every now and then. I'm particularly moved by them at being prior service. When a military father or mother comes home and surprises their little kid, have you seen these? You see what happens in that little kid when they hear the voice or see the face? Like, they just, boom. I've seen kids literally levitate and zoom across the room and pow. There is something very powerful about being truly known and knowing someone else. And if Jesus is real, he's a real person, he's still alive, then the power that he has for us begins in the knowing. Like any relationship, it grows through time and trust and shared life. So I've got a bunch of ways that can facilitate knowing Jesus and being known by him. I'm just going to give you two this morning because I think they are, I don't want to compare too much, but these are critical. I have two for you and then give you some idea about what's inside of those things. So it's foundational steps. Number one, solitude. You have got to get away from the noise. I say we. He whispers. He does not barge in. I would venture to say he's waiting. And we don't give him enough time. Let your soul breathe. Make space. Know when someone takes time. Right? How long does it take to really get to know someone? Same is going to be true with Jesus. It's not an instantaneous thing. The psalmist says, be still and know that I am God. There's some stillness required here. I say this very unfortunate thing to the congregation very often. It's discouraging, so just get ready. I would venture to say if you're just getting started with an actual know and be known relationship with Jesus, and you give it 15, 20 minutes a day, almost every day, I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 6 months before anything moves deeply within you. How discouraging is that? But we are sucked into a lot of noise and a lot of activity and a lot of hustle, and it takes a long time, more than it probably should, to actually hear from God. And it requires some discipline to do it. It's not complicated. It's also not easy. I feel that way in my real life. There's people I wish I knew better. There's people I want to spend more time with. Why don't I? I don't have time. And if you don't have time for somebody who's like right in front of you, it is a little challenging to be with somebody who's like not physically kind of like right here. That whole thing is, it's very strange. I will give you that. But if you're not committed to solitude, if you're not committed to that, good luck finding life in all the other ways that don't work. The other thing you're going to have to be careful of and be ready for in solitude is a sense of vulnerability. Truth is, most of us don't like the way we feel in solitude, so we get out as quick as we can. That's because the world is designed to numb your pain. We're used to avoiding pain. But avoiding pain, contrary to popular belief, makes you weak, makes you insecure, makes you needy. And you cannot deeply know Jesus if you're not willing to face what's real in your life, right? Know him, be known, all of him, all of me. We have this promise from him. My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. We're looking for the power of Jesus. We're going to have to be vulnerable, honest with him. If we're not, it's not a relationship, and there's no power. Bring the sacred writings with you. Be what they may in your mind, this coalition of writings and scriptures and books and letters and poems all have Jesus at the center of them. Many written by people who knew him personally. Take those with you and learn about him, know him from the scriptures. Practice gratitude in there, in solitude. Remember this verse, give thanks in all circumstances. That seems crazy. There's things in this life I shouldn't be thankful for. Not if he's in charge, not if he's the king, not if he's orchestrating the whole thing. So gratitude is a posture that says, oh, I can trust God with everything. This is either being orchestrated or allowed for my good and the good of the people around me. Be grateful for everything. Inside of solitude, expect to need vulnerability. Take the writings with you. Be gracious and grateful. Don't be afraid of the suffering and the grief that is in your life. Paul says, I want to know Christ. Yes, to know the power of his resurrection and participation in his sufferings, becoming like him in death, right? We have to be honest in the space of solitude. There is grief in this life. Always there is grief in this life. And it's not just when we lose a loved one. There's just general grief. Are you aware of that? You're going to die one day. We live with that somehow. That's grievous. Other people are going to pass. Things are going to go wrong. Trust is going to be broken. There is grief. Bring it in there. The showstopper is what I call somewhere else addiction. That's how the way I see news and social media and all that stuff. It's just my portal to somewhere else. And we're addicted to being somewhere else. I'm in a conversation, and someone's in their phone, and I say the same thing to us. Everything okay in there? Is everything okay out there? We've got to somehow break this. I would say do some fasts, do some breaks from social media and global news. It's too much for any one person to handle anyway. Right? Check in every now and then. Here's the second one. Surrender. Solitude and surrender. This is the willingness to hear from God, where he wants you to go. and what he wants you to do, and then to go without delay, without excuse. This is what Jesus said. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Paul says, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Surrender is not passivity. That's not what we mean. It is movement. It's getting out of the boat. It's showing up with availability and letting God do the leading. I was at a funeral last night for a beautiful man of God in this city. A professional, yet a leader in the church, Doug Schrock. He was 55. He was going to facilitate a wedding. He wasn't a pastor, but he was a pastor. And some catastrophic event took his life, just like that. This was a man who was committed and surrendered to what God wanted to do with his life. And during his funeral last night, his pastor put up an entry that he discovered in some of Doug's writing, some of his journaling, which the family had made available to him. You won't be able to read this, but I wanted to show it to you. He wrote it 20 years ago. And this is surrender. I'll read it for you. This is Doug. Whatever you ask me to do, I will do it without doubt, without fear, complaint, or regret. I only have one condition. I do not want to be misled or trust myself, so make it clear and concise. That's a surrendered life. That's a missional life. You want to get to know Jesus? You got to let him know you. You got to move into spaces of solitude, and you've got to live a life of surrender that says, not my will, but your will be done. Without those two things, you can't know him, you can't be known, and you will not experience the power of God in your life. Not in any significant way different than someone without the power of Jesus, right? There are powerful things that happen in this world. We're talking about something deep within our soul. We're talking about a peace and a rest that can be gotten no other way, purpose that can be gotten no other way, validation that can be gotten no other way. Without solitude, without surrender, it's not going to happen. And a few other things, which I said I can't get into. Not enough time. I probably talk about my dad a little too much. It just happens to be the clearest personal illustration I have of the kind of power that comes from truly knowing someone and being known. It's one of my favorite stories. Dad drives into their driveway, stone driveway, little retaining wall. I have been trying to fly. I had a towel around my neck, and I'd been watching Superman. So I took a running start, leapt off of the thing. And what I remember is Dad dropping his briefcase and drawings and catching me before I landed in the stones. He goes, hey, what you doing? I said, flying. And I said, I'm not getting much progress. And I need you to help me to get on the roof of the house. This is my dad. He said, here's what I'm thinking. If you can fly off the roof, you should be able to fly up to the roof. Why don't we try that first? So we did. We stood in the yard for, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes, and I leapt and sweated and tried to jump. I got on a little brick. I tried to jump where I was trying to fly up to the top of the house. Dad's like, I think you can do it. You got to keep trying. Is it the right towel? And I finally said, I can't do it. I don't think I can do it. He goes, I don't know. I don't think so either, at least not today. Why don't we go inside? Mom has dinner. Let's talk about over dinner and see what we can figure out. I am a very fortunate little boy, a very fortunate young man, a very fortunate old man to have a father like that, I know. He's gone. Died 4 years ago. And when people ask me if I miss him, of course I do. But mostly I don't miss him because I still feel him in the way I process things. When I'm solving a problem, I'm thinking of how he might solve it. When I'm insatiably reading or learning, I think of him When I fix things, I channel him. When I gather and watch my family, I feel like him. There's a voice inside of me, an utterly convincing voice, that says, give it a go, Mike. You can do this. And if you should fail, I'll be right here with you to learn from it. And that's just my earthly father. Well, what if we got to know Jesus like that? We could begin to hear his voice and his validation. The power in that is unquenchable. I trust my dad's voice because I know it. I know the person behind it, and that person knew me and believed in me and delighted me. Just imagine what that kind of power could do with your life, a life surrendered, meeting with him in solitude. What if you truly knew and were known by the King of the universe? You can. He's alive. The same power that raised him can empower you to truly live. But it requires your involvement in radical ways that will oppose the way this life wants you to go. If you go the way this life wants you to go, you're going to have to get your power from this life, which you know is going to be disappointing. So maybe today's your moment to start or renew or deepen the relationship with a real man who's really alive, who laid down everything for the entire world, including you. Wouldn't that be a happy Easter, huh? Amen? Wouldn't that be a happy Easter? Let's go.